What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Elevate Your Grind, brought to you by the Cannabis Lab. I am your host, Todd Rosales, and we have an extra special episode for you today. I know I've said that on probably every single episode we've had since this show has started, but today is extra special. Not only do we typically have our usual amazing guests, but we also have a new segment for you today. So this segment's something I've wanted to do for a while. It should be a rundown of all the biggest headlines in the cannabis space. We put a little fun spin on it, but hopefully you'll enjoy it. You'll get the news that you need to know about the industry, and then you can stay for a deep dive into all the great topics we have with our guests in our interview portion after the news segment. So folks, today is the first day of the new segment. Now, granted, these headlines might be a little bit older than you're used to, but it takes us a little bit to write this stuff. So bear with us and enjoy our new segment called The Lab Report. Stay tuned. All right, everybody, welcome to the new segment called The Lab Report. Recently, Senator Chuck Schumer came out and said that they are very close to getting SAFE Banking done. This sent cannabis stocks into a rally, a positive rally in the market. Now, the funny thing about that is this will primarily affect United States or US-based cannabis stocks. But for some reason, every guy you ever spoke to at a party is still investing in Tilray. For those of you who don't get that joke, it's a Canadian company. President Biden recently came out and said he'd offer a full pardon to all federal prisoners in jail for cannabis possession. Going to our correspondent live on the street, who's there to interview those prisoners being released, Spliff Johnson. Spliff, are you there? Can you hear me? Yeah, Spliff, just grab any of them. There's got to be like tens of thousands of people get. What do you mean there's nobody? Hold on a second, folks. Not many, just nobody in jail for federal possession. I understand it's not the state or local level. I get that. It's federal, but I understand it's not nonviolent offenders. It's just, Spliff, we're live on the air. All right. Okay. All right, folks. Apparently, there aren't many people in jail for federal cannabis possession. So we got nothing for you. On a lighter note, folks, the cannabis industry will soon be convening on the fabulous city of Las Vegas, Nevada, for the annual MJ BizCon conference, the largest conference in the cannabis industry where people will be networking, having drinks together, and sharing joints, or as COVID-19 likes to call it, the Super Bowl. Come on, folks. You've got 35,000 people there convening who are proud to work in cannabis. The only thing coming harder for you than a virus at MJ BizCon are all the people who publicly hate you on LinkedIn. And if you're going to attend MJ BizCon, you can get 10% off your ticket with the code PODCAST. Hopefully we get double paid for that ad. And finally, to all the companies out there raising money, which, let's be honest, is all of you, there is no more money in the cannabis space. It's gone. It's dry. According to a random LinkedIn post I saw from Vanx founder Carson Humiston, who I'm sure got it from a much more reliable data source than a random post that she saw on LinkedIn, the cannabis industry raised $1.6 billion from venture capital groups in the year 2021. To date, in the year 2022, we've raised less than $300 million. Folks, the only way that you're getting money out of a VC at MJ BizCon this year is to shake them down on the street, steal their Patagonia vests and their designer shoes. Well, that's it for this week's edition of The Lab Report. As long as we don't get canceled, we'll be here next week. We'll see you next time. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Elevate Your Grind, brought to you by the Cannabis Lab. I am your host, Todd Rosales, and it is lovely to be here today. As you can see, we're getting a little bit more consistent in our podcasts again, starting to get them to you as quickly as we can. Hopefully, we'll get back to one a week. We should be coming to you on this lovely Tuesday election day. I think today is the 7th. Today, we're actually recording this on the 7th, but I know we're going to premiere this on election day, so I can talk about it that way. My guests today, I have two guests today that I love talking to. I would definitely consider them friends in the industry. And, you know, just like everything in fabulous Las Vegas, which where MJ BizCon will be there next week, use the code PODCAST for 10% off your tickets. Do I get extra for that ad? I did two ads now. I did the ad and then I did the ad within the ad. So I think I should get double on that. But my guest today, just like the mafia is run by, or just like the casinos are run by the mafia in Vegas, the cannabis industry is run by the Chamber of Cannabis. So please welcome my guest today, Tina Ullman and Danny Baranowski. Tina and Danny, thank you for joining me.
Man, that is the type of intro we appreciate. Thank you for having us. We're so glad to be here.
Yeah, great to catch up with you,
Todd. I appreciate you not making fun of me for stumbling over the first half of it. So
There is still time. There is still time.
Danny and Tina, you know, I make that joke that you guys are in the cannabis industry, but you know, your group is extremely influential in the Vegas market. I mean, I personally haven't been to the meetings, but I've seen the influence that you've have around events. I've seen the ancillary events that you guys have done. Ricky has attended your events and it inspired him. I mean, he was extra fired up leaving a Chamber of Cannabis event. So I mean that truly. Like, I feel like you guys really do have a foothold at the center of the industry. And if anybody in the state of Nevada or within Las Vegas itself wants to be influential in the industry, I do truly feel like you guys are the best group to join out there. Having said that, I'm ignorant of the other groups, but I also feel like that helps support my case.
Well, we couldn't agree more. And thank you so much for those kind words. We appreciate it. But we do feel like we represent the we very well. And the we is comprised of owners, operators, team members, professionals, activists, and patients. And we try to have initiatives that really support the we, starting with legislation and regulation, and then meetings where everyone feels welcome and they can walk away learning something, having a little fun. We like to joke around and say our meeting is like a combination of a Chamber of Commerce meeting meets the Tonight Show, and hopefully everyone sees that. We loved having Ricky. He was inspiring to all of us, brought a great crowd of probably 250 people. So yeah, that's what it's about, connecting each other.
Very cool. So I'm going to kind of lamely transition into this because I know there are certain things that we want to talk about, but you know, I see a lot of synergy between Cannabis Lab and what you do at the Chamber of Cannabis, where we both provide significant levels of education to the industry with a focus on our own local municipalities, right? We do that at C-Lab all the time. Our next event, look at these shameless plugs that I'm just putting into the conversation, is going to be this Thursday at American Social on the next round of Florida licenses, if anybody wants to come out. But you know, that's where the similarities are. Where the difference is and where it truly impresses me is the influence that you guys have on the actual regulations in the industry. We're like Michael Jordan when they asked him about his shoes and he said, Republicans also buy sneakers. We try to stay right down the middle, but you guys are out there actually influencing policy. You know, what was that always the idea for Chamber of Cannabis when you guys started it? Was it just meant to be a business association or did you always have that idea to start to shape policy in the city of Las Vegas and beyond?
That's a really great question, Todd. Tina and I actually met in another advocacy group, Las Vegas Normal. Tina was leading the charge, doing a lot of business development, and we were really focused on, advocating for patients and consumers' rights and got a lot of really important legislation passed. And during that time, Tina, again, was leading, I was volunteering, and we both recognized the opportunity that we had to directly impact our local legislators, get to know them, build relationships with them. We have such cool legislators here, our local assemblymen. Tina and I used to live in the same spot. So we got to meet our local assemblyman Steve Yeager. And throughout the years, building relationships with him by supporting his campaign, going to meetings, accepting invites from him, even following each other on Strava, which is a fitness app that he and I like each other's fitness, you know, runs every now and again. Building those relationships with legislators allowed us to really understand more about what was going on, get more involved in the process, and then continually meet more and more people, more legislators, more activists, and really helped us understand that we can impact the future of the industry. And so our organization came to be because Assemblyman Steve Yeager came to us because of our relationship with him. He understood that we were cannabis advocates and industry leaders that wanted to, you know, have a say in what was going on. So he came to us and said, and came to the entire industry and said, I want to get this consumption lounge bill passed. And if anyone has any ideas or business models, if you could submit those to me, please do so. So this was during the pandemic. Tina and I were spending a lot of time together, really trying to figure out what was best for the industry and really how we could get everyone together when everyone felt so isolated and the industry felt so segmented. So we saw the opportunity in front of us and we got together with a bunch of our talented colleagues and we created our organization. And then we created the business model for consumption lounges
submitted it to Assemblyman Steve Yeager. This was after we, you know, Googled, how do we start a business trade organization? That was the best move for us. We, again, Normal was, you know, advocating for patients, veterans, consumers. We didn't see anyone advocating for the business interests and making sure that legislation was being passed and that we were impacting the community from and providing access for legal safe cannabis from the business side of things. So all that to be said, we started as a business trade organization, but we are more than that. We're not everything. We can't do every single thing that we'd like to do, but we definitely have a lot of good initiatives.
The one thing I love about the fact that you two are running the organization, especially when you said you looked around and you didn't see anybody kind of advocating for the businesses, is it doesn't really seem like special interest, right? Like neither of you are majority owners of a cannabis brand or a cultivation or anything where you would have direct monetary benefit from pushing something one way or another, right? You guys are truly stewards of the cannabis industry. You work within the industry. You know the majority of the people within the industry. So, you know, when we go back, it's funny, like to not get stupid or patriotic here, but when we look at what government should be, a government for the people, of the people, and by the people, you are right down the middle of what the cannabis industry is. And to be able to represent that, I think that's awesome. Because if we looked at this and you had, and don't get me wrong, these people are part of your group and they're influential, but it's led by you, right? So if you had the owners of these organizations at the top making the decisions and pushing for things, even if they were doing what was truly best for the industry, there would be a lot of ways to try to take them down or say they're only working in their best interest. And I believe because the two of you, you know, you are a very great representation of the industry, and I'm very happy to see that. So I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but do you feel that with the organization that you've built, and I think if I remember correctly, it said 62 companies and 400 members strong, that you have a great cross section of what the industry actually wants?
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that. And, you know, we do feel like that because our organization represents commerce and justice, and then the community. And justice should be first and foremost in cannabis. And then you build the business and you allow people to create wealth and jobs. So when you ask, do we have a special interest? We actually do. It's justice first and foremost. Both of us have been affected by the criminal injustice system. Dani got a felony when she was 18 for lighting up a doobie in a state park. My family members have served over 30 years for nonviolent drug offenses, and it's really affected us. So that's where our activism comes first, and then our businesswoman comes next. And we want to see justice now in commerce as well. We want to see equal playing field when it comes to licenses. Now that's very hard to do because it's cash only business. So if you don't have the capital and we can't get loans, then you are relying on people who are wealthy to give you that money and to believe in you. So we change those things by making new legislation and making new regulation. You know, change comes from the bottom, but for change to affect many, it has to actually be executed from the top down. So it's a pretty great recipe when you know how to actually put it together and make it into effect. And then you have all these other people that join forces with you and you organize to now get to where we are today, like you said, with 400 members and 62 businesses. We say this a lot, and hopefully we say it a couple times, but we think about the we. And we really try to create things that will help the most amount of people. So everyone has a little piece of the pie. There's so much energy out there where it's like only, you know, some people can win and it has to be at somebody else's expense. And it doesn't need to be like that. Though that energy comes from people who don't truly respect the plant, who are putting their own selfish desires. So we try to look at what our community needs, and they needed to hear from the leaders building the industry. So then we create a platform for that through our bi-monthly meetings, through social media, through making public comment. I serve on the subcommittee for social equity, diversity, and inclusion. And what that means is like, somebody gets to listen to my ideas and my solutions, but I get to bring them in from the cannabis industry. So a lot of things going well, a lot of progress in the last 2 years, but we still have a long, long way to go.
So let's get into that progress, because I think you guys are crushing it. And one of the things that you just, you know, you alluded to earlier, you guys helped pass AB 341. Clearly I'm reading that off of the stuff that Danny sent me. I have no clue what it is, but I assume you guys will explain it to us, but I know it's around consumption lounges. And then you had also, also mentioned that you had helped shape the business models for what consumption lounges are going to be. Now, I just want to add for the folks watching at home is they didn't design the business model or get this passed for consumption lounges in Lompoc, Florida, or Flint, Michigan, or you know,
Park, North Dakota,
somewhere, yeah, in North Dakota or Oklahoma. This is Las Vegas, Nevada. This is the entertainment capital of the world. Nevada. Sorry,
Remember last time?
I know, I'm getting blacklisted already. I'm not gonna be able to. As soon as I land at McCarran Airport, they're gonna tell me to turn around. I get it.
They're gonna make Nevada. You do a test.
They are.
Yeah.
Las Vegas, Nevada. The entertainment capital of the world, the casino capital of the world. So if anywhere you, the average person, is going to go into a consumption lounge, I would automatically assume it would be in this city. So tell us how you guys were able to influence this bill, and what can we expect? What can we expect to see being rolled out, and after it's rolled out, as the average tourist coming to Vegas, what we can expect? I'm not even going to say Nevada anymore. I'm just going to focus on Vegas so I don't mess up.
Stay safe. Oh, well, okay. So yeah, like I mentioned earlier, first and foremost, we got together with a bunch of our homies, and maybe we lit up a few doobies, and we thought, as the people driving this industry forward, what do we want to see from a consumption lounge? So the business model that we initially wrote was very, we were hoping for a fair and free market. Mm-hmm. Really the goal was, and like Tina mentioned, we were thinking about the we and not necessarily the me. So our main macro goal was, how can more people get involved in this industry? So when the bill went in, it was very loose. We wanted the opportunity for as many independent licenses to contribute. It ended up shaking out so that there's going to be 20 retail adjacent licenses and then 20 independent licenses. And then the most important part about that is 10 of those will be social equity applicants. This was extremely important in Nevada history. And I mean, social equity, yeah, it might be a buzzword, but this was the first time that it was included in Nevada's legislature. So really it's the cannabis industry making history. It's recognizing the impact of the failed war on drugs. Mm-hmm. Like Tina mentioned, we both have been personally affected, but imagine how many other folks in the community have, and then have been left out of the licensing opportunities. So that's part one, Tina.
Yeah. And then part two is making sure that people have the opportunity to create a viable and sustainable business that people will want to come to, i.e., so many different businesses that we already want to be a part of, such as restaurants, hotels, bed and breakfasts, event space, co-working space, very similar to Prohibition when they legalized alcohol. This is going to be the same thing. And people want different forms of entertainment. They want different places to consume, so people can have full-blown restaurants. I mean, I always say, take an example of your favorite restaurant and add cannabis to it. But then also maybe a co-working space a part of it. And then at night it can turn into a special event. So that is going to happen. Unfortunately, one thing that still has not happened is being able is for folks that aren't millionaires to get loans, like we talked about earlier. No. We would really, really love to see our legislator take some of the money from the taxes and put it into low interest loans and grants for diversity and social equity applicants. If you are a caregiver on the market, you know, all of these people that don't have access to capital is really what we're hoping for. But for now, it is what it is. And we'll hopefully see them open in 2023 and all types of business models.
I'm very curious to dig into that a little bit more, actually, because and I'm going to spit my opinion here. And I hope to your point about the loans and everything else, that we see safe banking at a federal level come sooner than later, you know. And this is something I've been complaining about till I'm blue in the face, is last year, $1.6 billion came in from venture capital. This year, we're under $300 million. So now you have different business unit, business types coming in, and they need to get funding. And there really isn't much funding out there. I'm hoping that this does bring in a new batch of investors into the space, right? But going back to the cannabis lounges, consumption lounges, whatever we have to call them now, My question to you two is, and obviously be as politically correct as you can, how much have you seen that actually looks attractive to go to? Because I'll be honest, and I might piss people off by saying this, most of the lounges I've been to suck. Like, it's a room, it's got some dirty glass that you can use. You're buying product in the dispensary and then going into this room that's filled with smoke. They don't have the best ventilation. It's usually dingy. It's not the best. There have been some that are okay, but I think it's a lot of times it's the novelty of, oh, this is a place that I can come consume cannabis. But there's not, I mean, I know the regulations just passed, but you don't have food that I would like to pay for while I'm out, if you will. You know, there's no real ambiance to it. It's not the equivalent of going to a bar with cannabis. And when I say that, not so much the alcohol side of it, but just the social aspect of a bar and the buzz and the energy and all that. So I'm curious to know, like, are we just getting more rooms that you can smoke weed in, or are we getting places that maybe not just the cannabis aficionados would also like to check out? Because I think that's where we really see the biggest impact of consumption lounges, is where you can take normies, as we'll call them, to this place and they can come and spark up and feel good. But if, you know, listen, you have someone who's never really smoked weed going to Vegas for the first time, they might take 2, 3, 4 puffs off of a joint and that's it. And then where they're going to go sit with their thumb up their ass the rest of the time. I'm just trying to figure out how do we get this to appeal to everybody?
So yeah, great question. Definitely a lot of conversations we've had around this topic. First and foremost, when we spoke to you last, we were calling it the social use venue. We weren't calling it consumption lounge, because I think consumption lounge has this really contrived connotation where you're thinking of hookah lounge, cigar lounge. It is that dingy place that you've been to.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate that our legislature had to take it back and call it consumption lounge. But that was to allow these, you know, kind of old school mentality people to wrap their heads around it. I have been to some really cool lounges all over the world. I think, you know, Canada, I've seen the, and again, this has all been gray market. So I know that, yeah, it's, you know, we're there. People have been having to operate in these like sesh environments, mm-hmm. these dark, dingy, non-well-ventilated rooms, but that's because this type of business has not been allowed to be out in the open with a free market, with capital backing it and things like that. And of course, in Las Vegas, once we do get this off the ground, I assume that we will have a bunch of different models that people will look to and reference. And that's what Tina and I are making sure, as well as our entire coalition, that when these do come into fruition, that other states and other countries are modeling after us. What we definitely want to make sure of is that cost of operating is not too high, that regulations are common sense, that, like, I remember during a one public health and safety commission meeting, they were talking about the servers that being afraid of, like, getting high. So at one point they were considering like an apparatus, which in my head it looked like the person in the consumption lounge was in like a scuba, like,
you'd have a bunch of guys dressed like Bane walking around.
Yes.
Like a pre-roll or
and a then job. Yeah, and then you're just in your own personal apparatus and you're smoking. So it's like, I think to answer your question, that there's so many pieces that can come into play. We are extremely optimistic. We know Las Vegas is going to do it sexy, fun, experiential, and relevant. We already are leading the way in adult entertainment, experiential tourism. And this is just the evolution of, we remain optimistic. Perhaps some people will do those lounge type things, but there's a consumer for that person too, mm-hmm. that wants to sit in the lounge. Mm-hmm. Whereas me and Tina, like, we want to go to this kind of sexy Instagrammable coffee shop place where we can have some tea, we can take a dab, Tina can smoke a joint,
we can have lunch, we can meet people for business meetings. Yes. Again, anything that we as consumers are already doing that we wish, oh man, I wish I could smoke some weed right now. Don't overcomplicate this. You know, tap into your entrepreneur side and ask yourself, where would I want to go? What would I want to do? And then hopefully try to find those people that have the resources to create that. You know, we look at such shifts in directions. Like, people want to go to music festivals. Well, 20 years ago, rehab at the Hard Rock was popping, and you know, now that doesn't exist anymore. So tourism and evolution continues to evolve, and cannabis is front and center at that evolution.
I believe that, because I believe that the alcohol industry is taking a hit wherever cannabis is. And you're starting to see more and more articles on how bad alcohol actually is for you. And people are switching more to cannabis for that disconnection feeling, for that social consumption feeling. And why wouldn't Las Vegas be at the heart of it? It's been at the heart of everything else that we've been doing from a sin or from a vice standpoint for the longest of times. What I want to see, and what I think will be best for the industry in general, and clearly this is all about my point of view, is if we get these lounges done correctly, like you said, where it's a place where it's a good restaurant with good food and you can add weed on top of that, or maybe it is infused for the people who don't want to smoke it. And for those of us who still like smoking joints, I think there probably has to be a section for that because of just the smoke thing. And that's just me being realistic. But if we see that, I want to see the allowance of cannabis into almost everyday life. Now, outside of Nevada, I think the people who have done this right, and it's one thing they've done right out of everything else they've done wrong, is the state of New York made it legal to consume cannabis wherever you can smoke cigarettes. Now, to me, that's almost a larger step than social consumption lounges, because we're at a point where I can walk down the streets of Manhattan and smoke a joint. I don't believe that I could legally walk down the Vegas Strip and do the same. I know people do it. I've seen it. You know, as a tourist, I'll say they probably don't enforce it too much. But I think that's almost just as important as the designated spots to socially do it. So I don't know. Do you guys see Nevada or Vegas in general taking any steps in that direction? Or is there just a lot of complications in place for something like that to happen?
No, we don't see that happening right now. You know, casinos, it's still federally legal. Those people walking on the sidewalk are going to
be. Damn it, that's the place I want to smoke weed the most, is in the casino at the blackjack table.
Well, and listen, that's why it's important that we get it right now. So once we can move into the casinos and sell a lot more weed and have a lot more experiences for people to enjoy, we can get it right now. And that's why it's important to surround yourself with people who have the foresight, you know, to think 5 years ahead. So many times in cannabis, we are reactive instead of proactive. Us ourselves are guilty of it. But having that vision and building those relationships with the lawmakers that can help implement that, and the business people, like, that's exactly where we are right now, Todd.
I'm super excited for this, because like I said, I think the models are going to come out of Las Vegas. I love the fact that the two of you are right at the center of this. And I think, you know, I think we'll see a lot of really cool integrations with cannabis, and I hope the experiential side of it is really there. You know, I hope people figure out a way to integrate some form of gambling, whether it's gambling on a sports app on your phone, if that's legal or something, and just giving people the way to view the games unrelated to the gambling there, or whether it's some of these famous chefs, because cannabis has been integrated into culinary for a very, very long time. If anybody's ever worked in a kitchen, there's weed in there. You know, so I definitely think you guys are going to lead the charge there.
Thanks. We are surrounded with some really, really awesome chefs and restaurateurs who already have business concepts developed. So, you know, people that aren't maybe in the space that aren't there now are going to be, and they're a lot better at building hospitality, restaurants, hotels, et cetera, than maybe some people that are just in cannabis.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. This weekend, we had a big store open at the Forum Shops called Culture Kings. Culture Kings has a huge store in LA, and they just opened one here, and it was retail experience, retail entertainment is what they called it. And that is a great place that there could be a consumption venue. They were giving tattoos there. They had a half court basketball court. They had a DJ. They had a bar. And then like super cool clothes and shoes and hats. You know, so again, things that aren't already created, that's where we invite the creatives to come in. Other folks might have to take a knee if you don't see the vision. Like, open the door for other people to get into the market that do.
I'm excited, because I really want to see more than just a room that I can smoke weed in, because I got to tell you, I can make a lot of rooms that I can smoke weed in, as long as I don't get caught.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
this is just the beginning. Like, this is step one of the evolution. You know, look at bars and just think back to the times that bars came around and how they've evolved today. I mean, Las Vegas, my God, we have the Chandelier Bar at Cosmopolitan. Did you ever think a Western saloon would turn into a Chandelier Bar?
So. Not once.
And one thing I wanted to point out, that because last time we spoke, this bill, we had just started speaking of it and just, you know, spreading the information. But one thing that really surprised us that we've kind of already touched on was the fact that when the bill came out, they're allowing ready to eat infused food. And so that did open up the door for chefs and for these Michelin star restaurateurs to have access to our industry. And again, that's another industry that's going to be revolutionized by inclusion of cannabis. So the culinary cannabis infusion is going to be something that I really can't wait to be a part of. I've already been to a lot of private dinners. I've hosted events, private events, and allowing people to try cannabis for the first time. It's a really easy entry point, and another access point for another industry to innovate. And, you know, for Las Vegas is already the center of entertainment and food and dining. This is one more evolution.
So it's funny when you're talking, I've been trying to like rack my head how you can do this differently. And I foresee, because I just had my first infused meal, like a really good 5-course meal. That was awesome. I don't know, the last Hall of Flowers in Palm Springs, not this past one that was up north, but the one in Palm Springs. And I totally see like a dinner theater type show with an infused meal, like some Cirque du Soleil type theater. Cause you can do that as long as you don't pair it with alcohol, right?
Yes, correct. And it's funny, the folks, some folks at Cirque du Soleil actually met with us about a year ago to talk to us about the bill and what it entailed. So again, a lot of people are watching that we don't even know are watching.
Very, very cool. That's awesome to hear. Well, listen, I know you guys are doing great. You're definitely influencing policy and everything else there. I want to, obviously, selfishly, I've been focused on the business side of this and the business plans, because social consumption really does intrigue me. Like I said, I think New York did the biggest step towards it, because you can literally sit outside on the street with your friends and smoke a joint and it'd be perfectly fine. And to me, that's the biggest integration of cannabis into your daily life. I think some of the ideas that you've talked about in Vegas are going to be super cool, but I'd love to see them work towards a solution like that as well. But let's talk about something that is pretty substantial in this too, is the inclusion of social equity, because our industry has been pioneering, or at least pushing very heavily for equity in any sense of it. Because let's be honest, with the inability to, it's already hard enough for minorities and others to get some of these business loans and VC investing and PE investing. And then when you don't have safe banking access or institutions coming into this, you're trying to raise money from private funds. And that could be even harder, because that's almost an internal network sometimes. So having the inclusion of social equity on here to make sure that people have a seat at the table, I think is pretty big. Can you talk to us about how that was included, and you know, is it one that's actually designated to actually protect people and help people, or is it something that just seems on paper?
Commissioner Ullman?
So I actually sit on the subcommittee for social equity, diversity, and inclusion for the CCB. And it was our recommendation that they make subcommittees, not just for lounges, but for the industry as a whole, right? So then you have experts helping guide the regulators, because they're not the experts by any means. And usually cannabis people aren't the experts on regulation. So nevertheless, we, being affected by the criminal justice system, we definitely wanted to have some kind of component that was the first step to justice for those people who have been adversely affected by, really, we'd like the war on drugs, but we had to negotiate down to nonviolent cannabis offenses. And people that were not represented, i.e. Black, brown, female, veterans, person with disabilities, and also the non-rich white guy. You know, you don't necessarily have a leg up if you don't have the money behind you.
You're so right. That I did not win the Powerball. I do not.
I hope you played for us, because we can't even buy a ticket here, Todd.
You did.
You did?
Yeah. I didn't know. I didn't win it, but now it's like $2 billion. So I feel obligated.
We'll send you some numbers and then we can all split it and hang out on the yacht together. the first step was establishing what social equity meant. And there are different descriptions for different states. And the consensus that was came to was if you have been adversely affected by nonviolent cannabis policy. So if you have a charge, your family member has a charge, direct family member. And in the case, in this case, there is certain zip codes that were given to us by the census and that you can look up that were affected by the war on drugs in Nevada and many other places. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, and you know, Michigan and Detroit was definitely affected by the war on drugs, much more greater than Nevada. So that's the first step, but we don't want to leave out that big chunk of people who maybe didn't have a charge and maybe whose family didn't have a charge, but they deserve an opportunity. And that's the diversity applicant. That is the person that doesn't necessarily have the capital like we talked about. So if you were applying for an independent license, you had to show a diversity plan. And that puts it back on the operator. It's not the CCB forcing you to hire X amount of people. It's saying, hey, we recognize that more people should have the opportunity. And here's what we're going to do to support that. That was, I think, a great compromise and negotiation across all parties. So, and that's, again, just the first step. I'll tell you one thing else I like about our equity plan is because it's a lounge and you can do a restaurant, you can have an opportunity for mini chefs. That's giving someone an opportunity to elevate themselves, eventually potential for ownership, you know, so it's step by step by step process. And you got to have the patience and the commitment, which luckily we have a lot of people that do.
How the social equity thing is great, because one of the things that I think will really come from that is when you have someone who it's not, they didn't have the resources prior and they were given an opportunity to have to go get the resources. I don't want to say they have nothing to lose, but they're willing to take risks that somebody else might not, right? They're not just in it for the money. And I think you two are a good example of that is, you know, you don't make money really from the Chamber of Cannabis. You're doing this shit because you love it. And, you know, you talk to me about all the things you're doing and it's exhausting to me because it sounds like so much work, but you're doing it out of the goodness of your heart. Like you're talking about meetings and being on this committee and that, and like that takes time and energy and effort. And you have day jobs as well too, that you need to take care of and you have bills to pay. You're not, and I don't mean to say this in a negative way, you're not superheroes that are awarded more hours in a day than the next person. You're doing this type of work with the same hours everybody else has in the day. So when you see people that are not super connected, that don't have it, and they're doing it because of their drive to give them an opportunity to succeed in this business, I think that's where you're going to see most of the innovation and models and success come out of. So, you know, you two, the work that you're doing is truly inspiring. I'd love to understand any words of wisdom or advice or anything that you can pass on to the Dannys and Tinas that are sitting out there in other cities that may or may not be involved in the industry, but want to make an impact. Because, and again, I know that we've been really kind of blowing smoke up your behinds this time, but I think you two deserve it because you're making such an impact on government policy. And just at a time where our country is so fucking polarized right now, there are so many people that think that they can't do anything or that their vote doesn't matter. And maybe today, tomorrow, whatever day this tomorrow, today, when it airs tomorrow in real time, that they think that they can't do anything. But there are two people that I know, that I talk to, that I text with, that are making real changes in their own city. And it's not a little bullshit city, it's Las Vegas. So what words of advice do you have to share with the rest of the people like you in the world that may not have met each other or started to organize yet?
Well, first and foremost, we recommend finding a group of like-minded people that share common goals and interests. So finding the group of people that see the macro vision, that just like Tina said, they understand that there is so much more for the we of the industry, and you can get more for yourself if you help other people get what they need. So finding that like-minded group of people, Tina and I luckily found each other doing volunteer work and advocacy, being community servants and community builders since since, you know, Tina was in Lutheran church and doing car washes, and I was, you know, being a young Mormon, you know, proselytizing through, you know, through service. But no, these are things that were ingrained in us. And as we grew into adults, we realized there is more. And something that I think a lot of people, young people struggle with is finding purpose in what you do,
yeah,
and finding a purpose-filled group of friends, a purpose-filled industry. And that's something that's drew a lot of people to the industry, myself included. But how can I enter the industry, work really hard, have the opportunity to try a bunch of different dynamic opportunities and build myself up through doing something that is, again, it has more purpose. There's more than just collecting a paycheck. It's, I can get involved. I can dictate the direction of the industry. Mm-hmm. And I can find people that we are all centered around the power of the plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finding your group, finding your people. And that usually starts by joining activist groups. And if it's not the group that you want, go build your own. And it's a lot of work, so make sure you don't jump in head first. Have a good plan and structure. And we encourage people to reach out to us. We have many mentorships within each other, right? Each of us has things that we're better at and we lean on each other. But because it's sometimes hard to find a mentor, like if you were in another well-established industry, we got to lean in, and who you want to build with. Like, this is fun. We are selling weed. We are not doing kidney transplants and rhinoplasties. You know, while the other people in the world like hate their jobs, you know, yes, there's challenges. Yes, you have to be able to pivot, but it is.
Yes, we still use Microsoft Excel.
Yeah. People are still in prison, and we forget that as we complain about, oh, we have to take another metric training. So stay grounded, stay knowing what your privilege is, and be around people that you want to learn from. Not always just smoke weed from, like, what's the next step? I want to smoke weed with you and learn from you.
Exactly. Check the ego, realize the privilege and also the opportunity right in front of us. I really just feel like anyone can do anything in this industry if you work hard enough and you really grab hold of that opportunity and just go for it.
That's interesting. And I love that you guys say to, you know, be around people that you want to learn from and not just people that you want to smoke weed with, right? Like, and not that those two things can't be the same, but, you know, let's be honest, there's a huge, I mean, we don't have to be honest, everyone knows there's a huge fucking stigma that we all fight every day. And we're sitting here and you guys are telling me everything that you're doing on a daily basis outside of what your day job is or the things that you do professionally. And it's a ton of stuff. And like I said, it's exhausting. So to me, the two of you certainly fight that stigma. I mean, Danny, beyond that, you know, and Tina, I'm sorry, I just know this from Danny, like the physical fitness that you do, the bike rides that you do, the working out, like, I think that's very important that as this industry starts to grow, we have to realize that the lazy stoner stigma, those are lazy people that happen to smoke weed. And just folks, when you go out there and you find people that are cool, just make sure there's another element to that. Like, I saw a meme the other day, and I think some people in the industry really need to learn this. Like, smoking weed doesn't make you cool automatically. Like, there are a lot of cool people who smoke weed, but, you know, it depends. What do they do outside of the time that they're physically smoking a joint or taking the hit? What are they doing with the feeling that they get from that? There's nothing wrong with using it to disconnect. But if that's the only thing you're using it for, then it's not the best.
Totally. I mean, and that is another aspect of changing the stigma. And Tina and I are both really physically active. We love being outside. We love enjoying nature. And I mean, I think we can both agree that cannabis is definitely, it hits different outside.
Do you use it on your bike rides?
So for me, I like to use it in recovery. If I'm mountain biking, I wait till I'm at the top because I like going down, but I think it accentuates the challenges if you're climbing. So yes, I definitely love smoking a joint with a lot of my colleagues. It's an icebreaker. It's a way that I have found when I moved to Las Vegas, I moved for the cannabis industry. So my only friends were in the industry. And then when I found the cycling community here, I've been cycling for a long time, but when I found them here, it was a great icebreaker to be like, hey, do you want to hit this joint? Oh, and this is who I am. And this is what I'm doing. Oh, and now I can integrate other parts of, you know, the community. Now I can, you know, be a part of this and that. And it's really another aspect of community building. And then truly having discipline is really the part of fitness that I enjoy. It's my meditation. It allows me to have good thoughts. I listen to a lot of cannabis podcasts. Today, while I was at the gym, I was listening to our last episode.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
And that was a good one.
It really was. I enjoyed it. And that's, you know, that's how I knew we had to do a few updates. And, you know, we're not, you know, calling it social use venues, but all that to be said, stoners are much more multifaceted than we appear. The stigma of the lazy stoner has got to stop. We are all building an industry that is massive, right? What, I don't even know the numbers that, you know, they're saying, but it's how many billions is this going to be next year? Well, we're on the ground floor and we're working our buns off and integrating all these different parts into cannabis. Almost every conversation I have leads back to cannabis, whether that be fitness, business, XYZ, PDQ. It just is very exciting to me and to Tina and the connections in the community and our lives and otherwise that we built because of cannabis. Continue to grow and grow because of the law of attraction, really.
Very cool. It's interesting because I've with biking, I don't bike, I don't think to the magnitude that you do, but I'll do like 14, 15, 16 mile rides. And awesome. If I smoke and then bike immediately, sometimes I feel a little bit of the hindrance, but a lot of times if I do it and then there's a little bit of gap, I've had some of my best rides because I'm just not thinking about what I'm doing. And in my head, like I start off, I'm like, just get on the bike. Don't like go for your records or anything else. And I just start pedaling and I turn literally my tracker and everything off so I can't see it. And I just ride. And then like I'm hitting PR times and it's crazy. And you know, people will tell you, you smoke, you're lazy. Well, like I'm riding a bike faster than I did stone sober with the intention of beating those times. So clearly it's doing something to this that's helping me get through it. So we're getting towards the top of the hour here. And I know we talked about how you guys helped pass the bill for social use venues, the influence that you had and really the structure and what we can look forward to. What is the greater Vegas cannabis market or Nevada market look like as a whole right now? You know, are there issues with it? Are people struggling? Is it thriving? To be honest, my opinion of the industry right now is a lot of people are having a hard time because there is no new money coming into it. And you know, with all the hardships they have already running a cannabis business, whether it's taxes or whether it's, you know, dealing with 280E, not being able to write off all your expenses, just all the little hiccups that we have to deal with along the way. I feel like a lot of markets are struggling under the surface, right? Like we see new brands and we see new things coming, but at the end of the day, without fresh capital coming in, it is going to be a struggle for a lot of people. And I think there are going to be brands and companies at this point that can hopefully weather the storm, but I don't know if you guys see it. I feel like we're on the verge of a lot of mass consolidation, and I don't know. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, our industry is struggling here in Nevada. It is unfortunately down. We've heard reports of 4%, but I've also heard reports of 20%. But it is down for numerous different reasons. I think the number one reason is discretionary income. When you don't have that discretionary income to buy from the dispensary, you're either not going to smoke as much, or you could buy from the traditional market. The excessive amount of cannabis, especially on the West Coast right now, has affected the Nevada market. We know people that drive over to California, buy a pound and come back and then split it with a couple homies and then, you know, consume that for a couple months. So that's where we feel a lot, there could be a turning point. And how we could turn that around is by revising unnecessary regulations that are costly to operators. In the last public comment, I gave a list of them. We were at a CCB roundtable where we also gave a list, and at the governor's roundtable and at a senator's roundtable. So these conversations are happening, but we need to see action. And one thing that we're going to be doing is having conversations every 30 days with the CCB, because those type of things can happen immediately. It doesn't cost money to get a lobbyist. You know, it doesn't have to change in statute. So there's a lot of little things that can help with savings. But we also want to make our state more competitive with other markets. So that means buying more cannabis. We are putting in a bill for the next session to double the daily purchase limit and the daily possession limit.
What's the daily purchase limit now?
It's 1 ounce or 3.5 grams of concentrate.
Not enough.
Yeah, not enough. People go over all the time, putting the operator at risk. Ounces today are $89 to $100 here in Las Vegas. And that's for a solid ounce with great terps, fresh bud. I just picked
one up.
See
you next week.
Yes. So people want to buy more than that. And people's tolerance has grown more. So we know that will help, everyone down from the cultivator to the patient getting it. And then of course the other one is allow felons to work in the workplace, but
that's the other aspect to the bill that we're going to be putting in. So yeah, just to kind of recap exactly everything Tina said, our industry has been seeing some layoffs. A lot of friends have been hurting, from business owners to our peers, our colleagues, and hopefully this will spur in some innovation. But again, as a business trade organization that represents the we and not just the me, we are putting in this bill. We're calling it the Growth and Development Bill. Last session was DUI reform and consumption lounge bill. So opening up commerce and protecting people in the industry. And now it's growing and developing those within this entire scope and this sphere. Allowing felons to work, getting more people in the workforce. Truly this industry was built on a lot of people that have been charged with felonies. There are still people in jail. Like Tina mentioned, you know, I was charged with a cannabis felony. If my record wasn't expunged, I wouldn't be able to work now. And Tina's family has been in jail for different drug offenses. And these are all people that want to contribute, want to build up the workforce. And we got to get that rolling.
I'm all for people with cannabis related felonies to be able to work. My fear right now is that with the layoffs in the industry across the board, is there's no space. And I'm sure there's space for a bunch of people, but for a large group of people coming into this industry, we're at an interesting time right now where people are really trimming the fat and slimming down, and that's nothing against the people that are getting laid off. I think the problem is we have tons of great people that are getting laid off because they're not afforded, and people are having to wear 3, 4, 5 hats just to keep a business afloat because this industry raised 20% of what it did the year before. So it's an interesting time to see, and I feel bad for a lot of people now. We struggle with mental health as a society as it is, and we're in a point in time, and this is something I've realized and, you know, going through it, like fucking LinkedIn is a thing. And, you know, when you lose a job, when you find a new job, you post it on LinkedIn, and it's not necessarily because you want to, because you get hired from a new job and they want you to make some fucking post that you're so happy to be working there and this, that, and the other. And it's annoying because in our industry, people are might have 1, 2, 3 jobs in a year. Maybe they have 5 jobs across 2 years because they work for some shitty companies, or their companies are undercapitalized, or they work there and they, you know, they didn't get a fucking paycheck for as long as they were there. So I think we're at an interesting point in time. And I worry about more people coming into this industry today. I know that this industry will recover and it will grow, and it will grow exponentially. And I hope that there's a spot for everybody, but I don't know if you guys are feeling the same thing out there, but I feel like there's a lot less jobs for more people.
Yes, I think we're at a flexion point. And with our bill and with the conversation that we're having with our regulators, we want to make sure that cost of operating is not obscenely high, so that there can be more jobs created, and that there's sensible regulations happening. If nobody is telling these regulators that don't consume weed that are making the rules, that those rules are cuckoo bananas, then they'll never know. And so that's why we are keeping this dialogue open. And we're making sure that, again, we, the experts, the drivers of this industry and this trade, the builders of the cannabis industry historically, are also the ones dictating the direction.
Hey, yeah. And I would say, overall, Todd, like, the industry is growing across the United States and experts are needed. There is so much movement. There's also a lot of turnover with people not even be able to getting to work on time. So there is absolutely room for felons in this industry. If people are willing to move to other states and open facilities, retail, production, cultivation, delivery, oh, there is surely enough room for people who have been affected by negative, not just, again, cannabis policy, but drug policy. I mean, it's something that should have been done before people even had the opportunity to make money off this plant.
Oh yeah.
And you know, for Nevada, we just had felons restore their rights to vote 2 years ago. And again, just having somebody pay for something throughout their entire life already, since they already paid their price by going to prison, they just should not have that hanging over their head. And so many people it affects that many of us know today. We definitely think there's room and we're making the room for them.
There's a part of me that really wishes that you guys would start doing this at the federal level too. I just know that it's a much bigger glacier to move.
Sure.
Yes. We're looking for angel investors. If you would like to invest in the chamber, we want to grow. We are looking to hire an executive director. As you said, we are volunteers, Danny and myself, and we want to be able to grow the movement throughout the United States and have those conversations. We have very strong conversations with all of our federal legislators. They were co-sponsors for many of the bills. They have signed onto the bills. You know, tomorrow is that big day where we get to decide who decides the future of today. Nevada.
It's today.
Yeah, it's today, technically. Today. Yes. So we encourage everyone who's listening to go use your power. And we created a great voter guide that's on the chamber page for candidates that support cannabis reform, the community, and our future.
We should, I got to release this early tomorrow. So this way people can see it before they vote. We're going to release this early.
Love it.
Please.
We'll share the voter guide.
Absolutely beautiful. Well, it is always a pleasure to talk to the two of you. I know that everybody is invading your town next week for MJ BizCon. Let everybody know where you're going to be, what you're going to be doing, and how they can get a hold of you.
Well, we have an extremely busy Rolodex, so you'll probably catch us if you're at any events, but if there are any business opportunities, any businesses that want to come be a part of consumption lounges, again, those have not started yet. So if you are a brand or you want to do a management contract, something like that, please reach out to us. Instagram is a great way to get in touch. It's at Chamber of Cannabis, or you can check out our website, thechamberofcannabis.org. We don't have a ton of time for meetings, but would love to connect. We're not going to be at BizCon. We'll be at the events. So we do have some time during the day. Please reach out. We are more than happy to start conversations and start fostering resources and connections.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Anybody out there, if you plan on having any kind of operations or any business dealings in the state of Nevada, please reach out to these two, because I guarantee you that it will be extremely beneficial to you. Danny, Tina, thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you, Todd.
Appreciate you.
Absolutely. And thank you to everybody at home. Everybody, go out and vote today. Today is election day, as long as we get this out on time. Otherwise, a lot of the comments in this is going to look very stupid. And everybody have fun at MJ BizCon next week. We'll see you when you get back.